What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe is in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, where Monday he stopped at several memorials from World War II. Tuesday, he'll become the first Japanese leader to visit the Pearl Harbor Memorial above the sunken battleship Arizona, commemorating the surprise Japanese attack in 1941 that thrust the U.S. into World War II. It's a significant event, says Jeffrey Horning, research fellow at the Washington-based Sasakawa Peace Foundation, a U.S.-Japan think tank.
And the fact that it sends a symbolic message to not only the incoming president-elect, but also to the region, that the U.S.-Japan alliance is stronger than ever, that we are able to confront past issues, problems between us, and still be stronger as allies.
Hornig was asked if China is watching the visit closely.
I hope that both China and other countries that may have some ill feelings towards Japan look at this and see that even though Japan has done some horrible things in its imperial past, that it is able to confront these past ghosts and overcome it. But I also hope that China in particular and North Korea see this, that the U.S.-Japan alliance, no matter what friction the recent presidential election here in the United States has caused, that the allies are stronger than ever and are able to look forward and hopefully look at challenges in the same way.
The visit follows an unprecedented trip to Hiroshima, Japan, in May by Mr. Obama, sought to the dropping of the first atomic bomb in 1945. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump will meet Tuesday with the Republic of Congo President Denis Sassou Nguesso. In a Twitter posting, a Congolese spokesman said the two men will discuss the turmoil in Libya and other Africa-related issues. The Congolese leader chairs the African Union's high-level committee on Libya. This is VOA News. Russian divers and submersibles are searching for the so-called black boxes of the Tupolev 154 aircraft that crashed Sunday shortly after takeoff from Sochi on a year-end mission to Syria. All 92 people aboard, including dozens of members of the prestigious Red Army Choir, were killed in the military aircraft. Defense Ministry spokesman Igor Konashenkov said the recovered debris includes parts of the plane's fuselage, cabin windows, with other parts still located underwater. While nothing has been ruled out, a preliminary assessment points to a technical malfunction or pilot error, not terrorism, as the cause of the crash in the Black Sea. Monday, Russia held a national day of mourning to honor those who died. Colombian investigators have concluded that mistakes made by the crew, airline, and Bolivian regulators caused a plane crash in Colombia that killed more than 70 people, including members of the Brazilian football team, near Medellin, November 28. The aircraft, a British Aerospace 146 Avro RJ85, was operated by a Bolivian-based charter company and crashed on a hillside because the pilot failed to refuel and did not report engine failures until it was too late. Air Safety Secretary Freddie Bonilla said so far the evidence does not point to technical factors, but human error and mismanagement. The aircraft was found to be over its weight limit and not certified to fly at the altitude the flight plan required. Russia and Syria Monday said they discovered mass graves of civilians, including women and children, among the ruins of the formerly rebel-held sector of the Syrian city of Aleppo. A Russian spokesman said mass graves containing dozens of Syrians had been found and blamed rebels. He said many of the bodies showed signs of summary execution. China is promising strong support for the African island nation of Sao Tome and Principe after switching allegiance from Taiwan to the mainland last week. The foreign ministers of both countries officially reestablished ties Monday in Beijing. Taiwan expert Bruce Jacobs said historically both Taiwan and China observe a one-China policy.
Because China is unwilling to have countries recognize both it and Taiwan. And this dates back to the period when both Chiang Kai-shek and Mao Zedong insisted on a one-China policy. There's a situation now where countries officially only recognize one or the other.
China sees it as a diplomatic victory. It considers Taiwan a renegade province. Only 21 countries and governments maintain ties with Taiwan. Ugandan authorities said at least 9 people drowned after their boat capsized on Lake Albert Sunday. Dozens of football fans were crowded on the fishing boat. Police in the Midwest U.S. city of Chicago investigating dozens of shootings over the Christmas weekend, including 12 homicides. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Nigerian army says it has dismantled the Boko Haram terrorist organization.
The president was quite pleased with the unprecedented speech of the capture of Camp Zero, to the point that he sent us a goodwill message, which is quite encouraging, and we are really proud of it.
That's Acting Army Spokesman Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Usman. Sudan says it has freed some opposition politicians detained since last month for protesting a rise in fuel prices. And the first company of a new Central African Republic army has completed its training.
Today, I'm satisfied. Why? Because it's still early yet, but the people of the Central African Republic have seen today the fruit of the work that has been done.
Joseph Jakete is the Minister of Defense of the Central African Republic, speaking through an interpreter. We'll talk with a South Sudanese who is this year's Mr. Africa International, and the true story behind the Queen of Ketwe. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Nigerian army says it has delivered a crushing blow to the Boko Haram terrorist organization by driving the militants out of their hideout in the Sambisa forest. In a goodwill message to the troops involved in Operation Lafia Dole, President Muhammadu Buhari praised their determination, courage, and resilience for finally entering and crushing the remnants of the insurgents. The president urged the army to maintain the tempo until the Boko Haram insurgents are brought to justice. Acting Army spokesman Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Usman says morale is high among the troops.
So far, so good. And we have done so well to the point that recently we embark on our final onslaught on the vestiges of Boko Haram terrorists inside the Sambisa forest. And last week, we were able to capture their stronghold, otherwise known as Parisu, specifically Camp Zero, where the hills were inside the forest. We have cleared it, and we have captured it to the point that they are no longer having any base wherever anymore. Suffice to also mention that last week we told the public to be more security conscious and more vigilant, in the sense that the Boko Haram terrorists are in this array, so they are scattering within the country and even across the borders. And luckily enough and thankfully too, people have risen to the occasion to the point that arrests have started to be made. And apart from that also, the roads that were closed for close to 3 to 4 years, for instance, the road that leads from Maiduguri through Gubbio to Damasak, and the one from Maiduguri through Bongono to Baga, were reopened on Christmas Eve, and quite a number of commuters have started flying the road. And one good thing about it also, over 3,000 inhabitants of Damasak town returned from across the border, and some of them from the internally displaced camp. It's a sign of confidence. And on the part of the military, for the first time, the hierarchy of the army, led by the Chief of Army Staff, they went all over our military locations in the Northeast to celebrate Christmas and New Year with the troops, and it was really, really good. And we are looking forward to a situation whereby the public will further assist wherever the remnants of the Boko Haram terrorists are. They inform the security agencies so that they will be arrested and prosecuted. And we see within the year 2017, we start rotating our troops fully.
Brigadier General, soon after taking office, President Buhari challenged the military to defeat Boko Haram. Would you say that the military has accomplished this task?
Yeah, if you look at it, we have been tasked, and we have done, and we have continued to do the best we could to ensure that the security challenges have been nipped in the bud. And typically, the issue of Boko Haram terrorists has decisively been dealt with, that they can no longer constitute the threat they used to constitute before. Well, as you are quite aware, the president was quite pleased with the unprecedented feat of the capture of Camp Zero and clearing all the vestiges of Boko Haram terrorists to the point that he sent us a goodwill message, which is quite encouraging, and we are really proud of it, and we'll continue to remain loyal and continue to do the best we could.
Brigadier General, so nice to talk with you again, and the best of the new year.
Thank you so much. I wish you the same, too.
That's acting Nigerian Army spokesman, Brigadier General Sani Kukasheka Usman. He was speaking with me from Abuja. The new year may see a turning point for the Central African Republic after more than 3 years of conflict and instability. The first company of a new national army has completed its training and is expected to be operational in January. Military trainers from the European Union expect to train as many as 2,000 new soldiers over the next 2 years. Zach Badruff was there in Bangui as the first troops graduated and has this report.
Central African troops show off their skills in this hostage rescue simulation.
Today, I'm satisfied. Why? Because it's still early yet, but the people of the Central African Republic have seen today the fruit of the work that has been done.
The European Union training mission has pronounced this group of 170 soldiers operationally ready. They are the first army company to complete the 14-week course, which included physical fitness, communications, close quarters combat, topography, first aid, weapons training, and other skills necessary for combat.
It's our mission to restore and consolidate a climate of peace. You must have permanent security to enable the government to regain control of its national territory.
The new army faces an uphill battle. The CAR has not had a national army since early 2013, when a rebel coup plunged the country into crisis. The CAR has been dependent on international troops for stability. Outside the capital, armed groups continue to control many mineral-rich areas and tax trade along the roads. The EU will start training two more companies in January. The trainers plan to certify 2 to 3 battalions before their mission ends in September 2018.
The reconstruction of the Central African Republic today requires time and requires patience. This work we are doing, we are trying to build something solid, built on concrete, not sand, so that it lasts.
But time isn't the only challenge. The CAR remains under a UN arms embargo. The government has repeatedly called for the embargo to be lifted. Some weapons could be acquired for the army if the UN Sanctions Committee approves.
I'm quite sure that when there is some good reasons and the COI that we have trained and that is going to be involved in a future mission, operational mission, is a very good reason. If the South African government is requesting the partial lift to equip that COI, it will be done.
However, the French general said the CAR will then likely need donor funds to pay for the new weapons. But for now, officials speak with pride about these graduating troops and the fresh start they signify. Zach Badorf for VOA News, Bangui.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 27th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Sudan's Minister of Information has confirmed that the government has freed a number of opposition politicians detained since last month for taking part in a protest against a 30% increase in fuel prices. The Sudanese Congress Party says 16 of its members were freed, while the Future Forces for Change Party said 4 of its members were also let go. Information Minister Ahmed Bilal denies the government is suppressing free speech by arresting the protesters in the first place. Instead, he said the opposition politicians were arrested because they want to bring about a change of government through violent demonstrations by allying themselves with armed opposition.
Actually, they were detained because, you know, we as Sudanese, we agreed that the authority should be changed through peaceful means and through democracy. But those who are detained, they want to topple off the regime through violence, through demonstration, through other means, with allies, with those who are holding the arms and so forth. That's why they were detained. I hope they all agree what our people agreed upon, that the change or the transference of power should be through election and not anything else.
But, Mr. Minister, those released were arrested because they were protesting. And so people say perhaps your government should allow people the freedom to protest.
No. If it is just a protest or demonstration, there is no problem. But they are arrested because they are calling for toppling the regime through civil disobedience and demonstrations, and also they were allied with the those who are holding the arms. That's why they were detained. Others who are not doing this, they are free to talk, they are free to say their opinion, and nobody arrested them.
Mr. Minister, where are we in the protest against the increase in the fuel price? Is everything okay?
Absolutely. They tried this twice. They call for civil disobedience, and it failed. There is no response. The people want now the change which we have reached through the national dialogue. Next month, we are going to constitute the new government, which is going to shoulder the implementation of our recommendations. And all others, we are going to join this. And there are also the negotiations with the movements holding arms. And the margin of freedom, it can be actually extended more and more if all we agree, and that through elections and through democratic means, the change can happen. And they have the chance to do. And now we have other African countries where the governing parties have failed and the governing presidents have failed, and through democracy a change happened. Why should we call for a change through civil disobedience or demonstrations and violence and war?
In the coming year, 2017, tell me, what does President Omar Bashir, what message does he have for the people of Sudan? A message of peace? A message of political reconciliation? What message does he have?
Actually, reconciliation. This is the message he has. And I think the greatest thing that has been done so far is the national dialogue. And Bashir is going to again stand or to run for presidency. This is, I can't tell, because I'm not one of his party. But I'm sure a great job has been done. We are so optimistic that 1917 and all Sudanese are looking forward for a big change.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. This year's Mr. Africa International is South Sudanese native Akol Duck, who lives in the Midwestern U.S. state of Iowa. Mr. Africa is a global competition open to all African men who wish to represent their home countries in beauty, brains, and strength. Doc took home first place this year, beating Mr. Ghana and Mr. Nigeria in the competition held in London in October. Doc says he hopes to use his newfound platform to bring attention to the crisis in his home country.
First of all, it was very humbling, and the best part of all is that I was representing the South Sudan flag, and you know, considering what's going on in South Sudan, that was a great way to really push myself and South Sudan, because I was with people from Nigeria, Ghana, countries who have a positive life behind them in entertainment and in music and in fashion. And I actually competed against, you know, a Ghanaian actor who does movies, a Nigerian model, a bodybuilder from Madagascar. So, and many people who are doing great things in their field, in their nature. So it gave me confidence in myself and belief in my abilities to say, if I can compete with these people, I can compete with anybody.
What do you think is the best way for us to tell our own stories and to put our own image out there?
It has to start with self-value. And I think self-value is how you portray yourself. And the example I always give is how we even introduce ourselves to people. You know, when, you know, those of us who have a really African tribal name, you know, we like to change, you know, like growing up, you know, my name's Akol, you know, but people call me Akol, And I realized a lot of Africans around me, we've bended our names to accommodate the Westerners. So I said, we portray ourselves in a positive light, and we say our culture is positive in life. And we see this recently with things going on, for example, in South Sudan, we see tribal issues going on. People don't talk about the positive things about what tribes used to do, the positive things about how tribes had a civilization. We necessarily refer to the negative. So we have to represent ourselves with pride and be proud of our background and our heritage and understand where we come from, not in a sense of just as Africans, but as the small groups that make up Africa and the small groups that make up our nations and our groups.
When I speak to a lot of young people in the diaspora, they talk about basically growing up with two different identities and trying to grow in your culture and embrace it, but at the same time struggling to find your American identity or struggling to fit in the West. Have you had those same struggles?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The example I always give is, so I went to Sudan in 2006. When I was there, I was teased because my Tomonja wasn't as good as it should be. So they say, you know, you became Khawaja, you're Americanized, and, you know, and that I took that personally. To me, even that's something that bothers me, that my mother tongue isn't the language I speak best. You know, I can speak it, but not to the degree I can speak, say, in English or Arabic. And so growing up here, the identity crisis was, what am I? You know, to African-Americans, I'm not African-American. I'm an African. To Africans in Africa, you know, I'm an American. But my parents, they, you know, my parents speak our tribal language fluently. They can tell stories in this. And trying to understand that was hard because at home you speak it here and there. You know, they talk to you, but it wasn't, you weren't fully immersed in it. So when you go out and meet other South Sudanese or Africans, you're like, whoa, we're having the same problem because we spend 8 hours a day in school speaking English. And we come home, we get yelled at because we don't know our language. We don't know our identity. We don't know our culture. And I remember my parents would always say, that's not our culture. That's not our identity. I was like, look, I don't know what our culture and identity is. And that prompted me to try to understand the history, the identity, where it come from, because I was like, I want to know my background. I want to know who I am.
Our South Sudanese Akol Duck, this year's Mr. Africa International, speaking from his home state of Iowa to Ayem Bio of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. An unlikely chess club in the slums of Kampala became a global powerhouse, and the inspiring story of the club's founder and members became a book and a movie. Faiza El Masri has more on how Queen of Katwe, the movie, is helping the kids of Katwe, the slum. Fifth Lapidus narrates.
Robert Katende started this chess program 14 years ago for children with disabilities in Kampala. Now it attracts hundreds of kids in 300 locations across Uganda.
I never imagined what it has turned out to be, for sure, because all what I was looking at was to see how best I would be able to empower these kids, to help them realize their full potential.
Queen of Katwe, a new movie from Disney, tells the story of Katende's chess clubs and Fiona Mutesi, the young girl who became a world chess champion despite her modest background. The film is set in the overcrowded slum of Katwe in the Ugandan capital, where Katende wanted to be a football coach for disadvantaged kids. But he noticed they weren't that interested in playing sports, so he decided to teach them chess instead. He started out with a team of five boys, whom he called the Pioneers. Fiona Mutesi joined later, and in a few years, the team was traveling around the world to represent Uganda in international competitions. Richard Tugumi is one of the original pioneers.
The film, I think, it's actually transforming a lot of lives of the people in Katwe, because personally, I believe now that it doesn't matter wherever you come from, because people here come from slums, but whoever will watch that movie will be able to know that there is life outside Katwe.
During the movie premiere in Kampala, the local actors shared the limelight with stars like British-Nigerian actor David Oyelowo, who plays Katende.
It was invaluable shooting in Katwe because it's such a specific place. And that's what I love about the film. What I loved about the script is its specificity. It wasn't just a general African country. This wasn't just a general depiction of a girl's life.
The experience of living in poverty is familiar to many of the film's Ugandan actors. Medina Nalwanga, who plays Fiona, used to sell corn as a child. Martin Kabanza, who plays her brother Brian, was also a child street vendor.
I used to walk around on the streets with shoes, selling them with my father. which I think it's somehow related to what I was doing in the movie. So I was like doing my real story.
And the movie, for the most part, sticks to that real amazing story of believing in yourself. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Cameroon says it has intercepted more than 670 kilograms of African pangolin that authorities say were being smuggled from Cameroon to Malaysia. The pangolin is the world's most trafficked mammal, and conservationist groups are calling for severe sanctions on the three traffickers who have been arrested. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon Customs Lieutenant Wara Wara François Noël of the Yaoundé Simalén International Airport told VOA the recovered pangolin scales were found in several meat packets. He said the three smugglers had bribed their way into the airport, but authorities were mobilized after getting a tip from wildlife officials. He says 2 weeks after the tip, his staff finally intercepted the truck loaded with pangolins at the plane bound for Malaysia. He says although it was the first large-scale interception of the protected mammal at the Yaoundé Simalén International Airport, authorities say they have been regularly seizing 3 to 5 kilograms of scales and meat of the pangolins hidden in little containers. 6 months ago, Hong Kong authorities announced a massive seizure of 4 tons of pangolin scales that had arrived from Cameroon and were being smuggled to Asian countries. Among the organizations assisting officials in this ongoing case is the local NGO, the Last Great Ape Association, or LAGA. Its deputy director, Eric Kabata, says traffickers have often been able to buy their way around sanctions when caught in Cameroon.
According to the 1994 wildlife law, anybody arrested and found in possession of part or whole of a protected wildlife species is presumed to have captured or killed that animal and is liable to a prison term of 1 to 3 years and or a 10 million maximum fine. If the law were applied as it was supposed to be applied, would have been seen many criminals, wildlife criminals, behind bars.
Some cultures consider pangolin meat a delicacy and use pangolin scales in traditional medicine. High demand has fueled an international criminal trade that has severely threatened the survival of the world's 8 pangolin species. It is estimated that more than 1 million pangolins have been snatched from the wild in the past decade. In September, the world's largest wildlife protection convention, known as CITES, recommended a complete ban on international commercial trade. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Briefly before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Egypt has confirmed it has arrested a producer of Al Jazeera, a broadcaster partly funded by the ruling family of Qatar, for provoking sedition on behalf of the media organization. That's it for this Tuesday, December 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a nice day.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
African Music Mix.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.